secret location in room 100 of 540 Jack Gibbs Boulevard. This is Craft. I'm your host, Doug Dangler. Tonight, from Midnight Theater, it's a special Halloween edition of Craft, featuring a dramatization of the short story Heaven Sent by Ohioan John Kachuba, presented by students from the Columbus City Schools Black Box Theater. But first, the author John Kachuba will tell me about writing this story and others, and his experiences encountering ghosts throughout Ohio. Maybe close to you, maybe in your backyard, maybe in your house, maybe in your bedroom, or right next to you! Or maybe not. John Kachuba, welcome to Craft.
Well, hi, Doug.
It's great to have you on here, especially since we're about to hear your story, Heaven Sent, as performed by members of the Fort Hays Black Box Theater.
I'm looking forward to that, too. It'll be a first for me, so I'm really interested to hear how it goes.
Okay. In what way is it a first? Your first story that has been produced for audio?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, this would be the first time I've had, that story has been in print, but never in audio. So it'll be interesting to hear how it's being interpreted.
Okay, good. Well, I'm looking forward to it as well. Tell me about this story. I don't want you to give away any of the surprises in it, but what led you to the writing of it? And maybe what were you thinking about as you wrote it?
Sure. Well, again, without giving too much away myself, it does have a story in it, a storyline that has to do with the paranormal, which has to do with our feelings about death and the afterlife. And what I could say is that there's a character in here who is dealing with the death of a brother, and he's finding it very difficult to sort of find closure for himself. And it's something that I've been looking at, not so much in terms of death, but a lot of my current work and previous work has been on paranormal topics. It's been on ghosts and ghost hunting. And a lot of that has been sort of what I call the boo factor, in that it's been talking about haunted locations and what happens there and that kind of thing. But it's opened up deeper levels of inquiry for me in terms of, if ghosts are real, what does that say about us? What does that say about our existence? What does that say about religion and theological views of death and the afterlife? So it opens up a whole lot of questions. And I was able to explore it in this short story, I thought, in a way that rings true, in the sense that it's not a what should I say? It's not like a B-grade, a B-movie level kind of thing, but more what I experience to be reality. Some of the work that I've done with various paranormal investigators has, sort of lends credence to this, because this is how people would approach the subject of the afterlife that are involved in researching it now. So it reflects kind of the reality of what paranormal investigators are looking at.
Okay.
And it questions, it brings up the questions of life and death and what comes after.
All right. Tell me about some of that paranormal work. You've got several books, as you've said, on the topic. You've got Ghost Hunting Ohio, Ghost Hunting Illinois, Ghost Hunting Ohio, On the Road Again, a return trip to Ohio. So tell me about finding these ghosts, finding them in a location that, I take as a Midwesterner to be as down-to-earth and ghost-free as Ohio. I would assume much more California. Based ghost, where anything goes, people will come back.
I suppose that's a way of looking at it. Ohio surprised me too. I'm not a native Buckeye. I mean, I grew up in New England, but it seems to me that there are ghost stories and ghost phenomena happening everywhere. It doesn't matter if you're in the Midwest or on the crazy West Coast or the more buttoned down East Coast, whatever you want to call it. It's there, and it's been in traditions of cultures all around the world since time began. So there's something to it, in the sense at least that people have the feeling that there's something out there. And I found Ohio to be very interesting. The places that I've gone to and all the places that I write about are places that are open to the public. So I don't write about, Aunt Susan's haunted house. But I will write about haunted music hall in Cincinnati, you know, or the Kelton House in Columbus or the Thurber House in Columbus, you know. So I write about places that people can actually go to. And I've been doing this now for, I guess, about 10 years at this point. And I've probably been in hundreds of locations, not just in Ohio, but actually all around the world. I've done some international work as well. And I just find it very interesting that these places exist, that people have experiences there. Mm-hmm. And I can only say experiences because we just don't know the nature of what those experiences are.
Okay. Have you had a comparable experience to some of the ones that people may have described to you, where you felt that you were in the presence of something?
I have. And again, the question is presence of what? You know, but I've been in areas where we have recorded on different kinds of voice recorders, voices that were not heard when we were actually there and voices that didn't belong to any of the people there at the time. For instance, I was at a country club that's supposed to be haunted in New Vienna, Ohio. And there was myself and two other people in the men's locker room of the country club. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning. We were sitting around a table and we had little recorders. And all we did was introduce ourselves to the room. So somebody would say with the recorder running, "Hi, I'm Bill. Hi, I'm Tom." And then I would say, "Hi, I'm John." And upon playback, you know, we heard the three of us introduce ourselves. And then right after my name, we hear this, "John," a long drawn out, clearly whispered "John." And New Vienna is in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's even more nowhere. Mm-hmm. So we get those kinds of things. I've had that, but I've been in places where objects have moved, and I don't mean just, you know, a little vibration. I mean watching an 18-inch long cast iron hook lift up on top of a stove, do a 180, quickly, fast, and with force, and slam down on the stove. I've seen, you know, lights moving in different rooms and things like that. So yes, I've experienced a lot of what people tell me they're experiencing in these locations.
What is your reaction with something like that? When a cast iron hook moves around in your presence, I'm curious, is there a lot of screaming? Is there? What do you do when that happens around you? I'm not exactly sure what I would do.
Right. Well, you know, in my first aid kit, I keep a change of underwear, you know. Well, you know, it's amazing because some of these places are obviously creepy, you know, and as soon as you walk into them, you go, wow, this is kind of a creepy place. But I think we bring that notion of creepy on ourselves, and I think we put ourselves in that state. Having said that, when these events occur, I don't really find myself terrified by them, and it's not because I'm some big tough guy that's not afraid of things, but it's just that they're so amazing and so awe-inspiring that when they happen, your first reaction isn't to run out of the room screaming. Your first reaction is to stand there and look at it and go, how the heck did that happen? I know what I just saw, but how did it happen? So you don't even really think about being afraid. I think sometimes it's later, after you've had a chance to review the experience, you know, and you're out of there and you're sitting at a coffee shop someplace, and you start thinking, oh my gosh, you know, what was that? You know? Mm-hmm. But at first, it's not your reaction. It's more you're just completely stunned and surprised.
Do you have a place that you've decided that you're not going to return to because of an experience that you had while you were there? You thought, you know, that's enough for me. I guess that's my way of saying, what's your most haunted place?
Right, right. That's hard to say. There's been places that I have felt a little more uncomfortable than others. One place is the West Virginia State Penitentiary in Moundsville, West Virginia, which is open. It's like the Ohio State Reformatory in Mansfield, Ohio, and that they're both open to the public now, and you know, you can take tours there. Moundsville was a very unsettling place. I don't know how else to describe it, other than just being in some of the places feeling very uncomfortable. Would I go back again? No. Yeah, I think I probably would. I don't think it has quite deterred me to that point. So I guess I'd say there isn't any one place just yet that I would say, no, I would never return. But there are some that are close.
Okay. So you had mentioned the Thurber House, which is in central Ohio in Columbus.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about your experience with that, or if you can't do that, maybe reference the book that it would appear in that people could then read about your experience, because I think it appears in one of the books, doesn't it?
It does. In fact, it appears again in the Ghost Hunters, Ghost Hunting Ohio on the Road Again, which was my newest one. And in fact, I just conducted a humor writing workshop at the Thurber House this past Monday. So it was kind of interesting.
So did you take a tape recorder after your jokes to see if any of the ghosts were laughing with you? Is that what you did?
I should have to see if the ghost of Thurber thought it was pretty funny, you know? James Thurber wrote a short story called The Night the Ghost Got In, and it's a very famous story. And it talks about a haunted occurrence that happened in the Thurber house when he was a student at Ohio State University, when he was living at that house with his family. And he wrote this story, and of course he exaggerated and made it a very funny story. And it's a great story. It's one of his best, I think. But the interesting thing is that he always maintained that the events, the basic events of the story, were true, that it actually happened, that they actually heard these footsteps in the home when there was nobody there and things like that. And in fact, till his dying day, he maintained that that house was haunted. He even went so far as to say that he had heard from residents that lived in the home before the Thurber family moved in there that they had experienced the same kind of phenomena. And in fact, in my book, I talk about some of the writers who have had residencies at the Thurber House over the last several years who also have experienced the same kind of paranormal phenomena in there. So it's been going on now for decades. And that's about all I'll say because it's in the book.
Okay.
But it's very interesting.
Well, tell me about how you got into writing. You've actually written things beyond the paranormal and beyond ghost hunting. You've got a couple different books available on Amazon. And I'd like to know a little bit about your writing background. I think you went through the program at Antioch. Is that right?
I did. I went through two programs, actually, two academic programs. One at Antioch, where I received a master's in creative writing. And I also received a master's in creative writing at Ohio University. And I taught there for several years. And in fact, I still teach through the offices of Ohio University. I now teach in their distance learning program since I'm based in Cincinnati, creative writing. And I also teach creative writing at Antioch University Midwest in Yellow Springs, which is sort of a low residency program that sort of sprang from Antioch College. But I've always been a writer. You know, I first started writing when I was probably 9 or 10 years old, starting writing poetry. I remember that. And I sort of took a diversion. I was an English major in college, got my bachelor's degree in English, but when I graduated, went into sales and marketing. You know, I was in medical and pharmaceutical field for probably 20 years. But all that time, I continued to write. I was writing short stories, I was writing poetry, getting little publications here and there. But all knowing all the time that really what I should have been doing with my life was dedicating it to writing. So at the age of 40, at that time, I actually was running an advertising agency that worked with medical and pharmaceutical clients. At the age of 40, I just closed the door and said, that's it, I'm done. And I just walked away from it and went to writing full time and watched my income drop about 500%.
So say, how did that go over with anybody that might have been depending on you or in a co-financial situation with you?
Well, exactly. And I did. My wife was very supportive of that move. And in fact, at the same time that I was doing that, going independent, she quit her government job and started her own company. So we both decided we were going to walk off the gangplank. And it worked out very well for both of us, actually. I am not anywhere near as wealthy as I used to be, if you want to even call it that. But I am much happier and much more content because I am doing what I should be doing, what serves my heart and my mind, and hopefully will serve my wallet at some point. But, you know, it's doing what it should be doing, and I would not have changed anything at this point.
Okay. Describe for me then, since you've taken this new turn, a day of writing for you, what that means when you decide to, you know, from the moment you get up in the morning to at night, what are your patterns? Are you somebody that's really consistent about what you do? Do you have a lot of variability in it? What's that like for you?
I try to be consistent. I believe in the premise that, I forgot if it was Annie Dillard or somebody that said basically you have to put your butt in the chair every day. Even if nothing happens, you have to be there, you know, ready for it. And so I do try to have a routine schedule where in the morning I do my creative work, and that might be from, you know, 8:30 to noon or something like that, 3 or 4 hours in the morning where I try to do nothing but new creative work, working on a novel, working on a short story, whatever it might be. In the afternoon, I kind of I reserve more for the business end, like we're doing now, doing interviews, you know, working on reviews, sending out emails, whatever needs to be done, more the marketing and promotion end of the book business. Because I really believe to be successful, it's one thing to be a writer, but you really have to be a salesperson. You really have to market yourself. No matter what your publisher does for you, in the end, it's your responsibility. It's your baby, you know. Mm-hmm. So I spend a lot of time doing that. But I also believe that you've got to take breaks from the creative work and sort of the business end of it to just be sort of free-form creative. So I'll take a walk in the afternoon. You know, I'll do some exercises. I'll play guitar. I'll read a book. Go see a movie. I try to break up the day a little bit if you can, or the evening, with something like that, just to walk away from sort of the concentrated effort and just let your subconscious do the work by engaging in some other creative activities that may have no direct bearing on the writing. But I do think there's a subconscious bearing. I think all the time your subconscious is working. And I think anytime you can fuel it creatively through other outlets, that it's going to help your writing as well.
Okay. Let's switch for a moment over to your humor writing. Tell me about what got you into that, and then I'm going to follow up with the kinds of advice that you have for somebody to be a humor writer.
Sure, sure. I don't consider myself to be a humor writer in the sense of in a style of Dave Barry or James Thurber. You know, people who sit down and say, I'm going to write a humorous piece, and they do, top to bottom. I'm more a person that tries to insinuate humor in pretty much everything I write. Even the most serious short story, you know, might have some flashes of humor in it. And I think there's, I'll have to think about it, but I think there's even a couple of places in Heaven Sent, which is going to be, you know, produced here, that I think have that. So my whole approach to humor is that it's something we should all be aware of, and that we all need it much more in our lives. So if that's the point, if that's the case, then why not try to put it into your humor? And so I think it serves a lot of purposes in humor. You know, it can break up something that might be emotionally draining for somebody to read, or emotionally gripping in some way. You say, okay, I need to relieve the tension here. So you put in something that's humorous. And it works. It gives your reader a reprieve and allows them to sort of catch their breath and then go back into it again. It's also a coping mechanism because it's a way to talk about the truth, which may be a very painful, depressing truth. If you do it through humor, it allows you to talk about it and allows you to talk about it in a very free-flowing way and sort of work through things. So I use it that way. And I certainly have written pieces that were just designed to be humorous top to bottom, but I'm more just apt to put it in sort of an unexpected places.
Okay. I'm curious who you go to if you have a writer's group, or if it's somebody, say your wife or something, that you try out the humor pieces on, because that seems to be a theme about a lot of people I know who write in humor. They do want to get somebody else's reaction to the humor in a way that you might not with, you know, make somebody sit down and listen to a short story, or say, you know, Heaven Sent, the story of today, of this episode, and find out whether it scares them. There's a different thing in play when you're writing humor. Is that something that's you've worked on or considered?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think there is. It does have sort of a different feel to it. And I do meet once a month with a couple of writer friends of mine. We have a third Thursday, it's called. And we do get together and we talk about our work. And so the humor comes up there, and they've been very helpful in how they look at it. And I have some other writers who are long distance. They're not in my area, but other writer friends who I connect with pretty often on Facebook or whatever, or just through email. And we exchange, we'll exchange work that way too. And I get some feedback. And I'm always trying out the humor of my wife too. Mm-hmm. Good audience. She's a good audience.
Yeah. It's a common theme. I've done that. My wife has suffered for many years with my sense of humor. And, right. I think I may have exhausted all of the jokes. The last question I have for you is what are you working on now? You mentioned that you were working on something this morning. Do you have a new ghost hunting book out? What's your next project?
Right. Well, the thing with me is I keep a couple of projects afloat at the same time, which I'm not sure if that's good or not, but I do it. So I'm writing fiction. I'm writing fiction that is paranormal based fiction, but again, with sort of the more realistic attitudes towards it. But I'm gearing it towards young adult audiences, primarily boys, maybe 10 to 12 years old. So I've completed a novel for that audience, and I'm working on a second one now. And they're paranormal, but they're funny. You know, there's humor in there as well. So I think they're really great. Just got to find a publisher for them, but I think they're great. I'm also working on historical fiction, which I have a strong interest in that. And I'm working on a trilogy about Lafcadio Hearn, who was a Cincinnati journalist here in Cincinnati for about 20 years, and then ended up another 20 years or so in New Orleans. And finally ended up in Japan, where he spent the rest of his life. So, very interesting character. He also had some sort of strong interest in the paranormal as well.
Okay. What made you decide to aim for the young adult market? That seems like a departure from maybe some of the things that you've done previously.
It is. And I think part of it is that I now have 10 grandchildren. And I guess, and they're all young. They're too young to be reading this right now, but I guess I wanted to leave something specifically for my grandchildren that they might be interested in that would give them some idea of who I am as well, because not only is my paranormal interest in there, but a lot of this 12-year-old male character who's in these novels, a lot of that is me. Mm-hmm. As a 12-year-old. So I'm conjuring up my 12-year-old again.
So you'll be able to be a contemporary companion to the children, telling the same jokes through the books when they're 12.
That's right. Okay. That's what I hope for.
Okay. Well, John Kachuba, I thank you very much for talking to me today on Craft.
Thank you, Doug.
And I thank you for your story, Heaven Sent, which is part of this broadcast and is being brought to life, which is a funny thing to say about a ghost story, by the Fort Hays Black Box Theater students. So it's also available, along with your other stories, on Amazon.com. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you, Doug. It's been a pleasure.
If you enjoyed the conversation that I had with John Kachuba, join me every Wednesday at 8 o'clock for Craft on WCBE, Central Ohio's NPR station. You can hear many of the past shows from Craft at www.craftheshow.com, or you can visit Facebook.com/craftheshow. And remember, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on Central Ohio's NPR station, listen to Craft. And as always, be creative.